Coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, leave a rating, and share it with a friend. Also, don't forget to check out Monday's In the Crease podcast with Ahern and Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. All of your D1 podcast updates and information right here at Inside Lacrosse on Audio Boom. Dixie, let's get it. All right, Dix, I appreciate you coming in and doing this today. Usually record on Tuesdays, get a true Dixon Tuesday takeaway.
Yeah.
But we have a nor'easter that's going to hit us. So we had to reschedule two different times. We were thinking about trying to do this at my house tonight.
Not happening.
But because we don't live that far from each other.
Right.
About 30 minutes south of the city of Baltimore in Columbia, Maryland.
Ellicott City over here. I'm the 042.
Oh, yeah?
042.
Oh, it's a ritzy address over there. But I get the CA and all of its membership benefits.
Oh, I get the CA.
You pay
the CA fees and don't get jacked for benefits.
No pool?
I'll have to shovel my own snow. Yeah, we get the pool, but we belong to Forest Hill because it has just other amenities that we want. So basically, I get held up and jacked by the CA every year. One of the biggest rip-off organizations on the planet. You just struck a nerve, man.
I think I did.
Totally struck a nerve. They don't rake. They don't mow my grass. They don't rake my leaves. They don't shovel my snow.
I got to do all that, too. But just to clarify, so you're allowed to go to all the pools and stuff like that?
If you pay. You've got to pay extra for that.
But it's not that much.
Come on.
It's like being a member of a country club, but there's 27 locations.
Dude.
Three gyms you can go to.
Our CA,
indoor things you can get.
Our CA bill annually is like $1,400 to $1,500. And I get nothing out of it.
I'm with you on that one.
They maintain the walking paths in my
that's
neighborhood.
It. Well, okay.
I have to pay extra to go to the CA gyms, pay extra to go to the CA pools.
Indoor tennis, golf courses?
CA is a joke. Like Flavor Flav 911 is a joke. CA is a joke.
Wow.
With a capital J.
Don't be disrespecting the city of Columbia.
I'm not disrespecting the city of Columbia. I'm telling you, CA sucks.
I think I'm going to run for some type of office in my community so that I can eventually get on the CA board.
Dude,
elections are coming up next month.
That's fine, because then I'll
I need to get involved. I want to take some.
Then I'll go to meetings, and I'm going to be that angry citizen just yelling and carrying on.
I love it.
On.
I want to plant a stake into my community and become a pillar of.
I might even flip a table or something like that. I hate the CA. Hate the CA. Let's move on. People
right,
want to
so
hear.
So anyway, so we're recording this because we're expecting a blizzard is supposed to hit us.
Crazy.
You know, we've been talking all spring about how, well, really February, before spring, it's not even spring yet. It's March 21st, right? So it's still winter, technically.
Yep.
Talking about how great the weather's been around Baltimore and much of the East Coast, and we're finally getting our first big storm of the year, and we're going to get pounded. I think just here in the D.C. Baltimore area, somewhere between 6 to 12 inches, and up north in a lot of our listening area, hotbeds of lacrosse like Philadelphia, Jersey, upstate New York, Long Island, up in New England, close to maybe two feet of snow in some places along the Atlantic Ocean coastline. So I hope everybody is doing well. And this will make for some great listening, hopefully when it drops Tuesday night or on Wednesday morning, our usual spot. You can, while you're stuck at home, snowed in, you can listen to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast and have Dix drop some knowledge on you.
dropping something, that's for sure.
I picture people shoveling snow while they're listening to this.
While they're listening to this? All right, well, let's entertain them then.
All right,
when you talk about the weather and it, I've said it. Dozens of people have said it. I mean, when it's 70 degrees, Hopkins, Loyola, and just great weather, it's crazy because you're like, oh, well, in a joking way, you're like, well, March is going to be terrible. We're going to get all the bad weather in March. And you're saying that tongue-in-cheek. Well, it's actually coming true. I mean, this weather is terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's been freezing the last couple of days. You mentioned the huge snowstorm I've been affected personally.
Yeah, so that's
the Princeton-Rutgers game was scheduled for tomorrow night, 7 p.m. live on Big Ten Network, and they moved the game. They moved the game to Wednesday, and because of programming, we're not going to be able to produce the game and broadcast the game on Big Ten Network.
So let me just give my take on this. So explain to people who are listening. So you're scheduled to do it on Tuesday. On Wednesday, they have a full slate of programming already scheduled. So production trucks going to places, the crews, a list of like this game is supposed to air or this sporting event. So what they're telling you is, hey, because the game got moved, they'll still play. Maybe Rutgers. It's at Rutgers?
It's at Rutgers.
So maybe their in-house broadcast will stream it, but the Big Ten Network won't be doing the game because it got moved, correct?
Right. And okay. And these schedules, broadcasting schedules, are made months in advance. And it takes a while to crew it and to get the trucks and all the different features that come along with broadcasting a live sporting event. And so when the game gets changed, programming is in place. Not only has that lacrosse game been scheduled and programmed into the network's itinerary, if you will, other programming, throughout the day and that week have already been put in place, a long time ago. So unfortunately for lacrosse fans, we're not going to be able to bring you that game live. That's going to be a terrific game. You know, Princeton's on a roll, and Rutgers, I mean, coming off that 17-4 win over Stony Brook, is
huge,
playing as well
that.
As anybody in the country. Huge. So, but hey, we've got a ton more games on Big Ten Network throughout the season, and we'll get you back. But unfortunately, the Princeton-Rutgers game tomorrow night will not take place on Tuesday night, but the game taking place on Wednesday night will not be broadcast on Big Ten Network.
This weather should affect a lot of the Tuesday, Wednesday games.
Towson, Ohio State is for tomorrow evening at Towson or on Tuesday evening.
I can't imagine them playing that. If we get a foot of snow, I can't imagine them.
And I know that there's other games, too, that will probably be affected and have already been affected by the weather. I mean, we had Maryland-Albany this past
weekend. Yeah, so what happened there? So it was 19 degrees in Albany. I think they just postponed it because of the weather. But the teams were there. Well, Maryland was there. I imagine the officials were there. Why didn't they just play the game?
I think it's always safety first, safety of the players, the coaches, the fans, the officials, the staff. I mean, everybody involved. If you recall, it was last year, the second or third week in February.
Maryland Navy.
Hopkins UMBC. I mean, I'm sure there was a slew of other games as well that were not played. Boston University this past weekend was to play Colgate. That game is being played today, Monday, because of cold, frigid temperatures. So it's always, there's a certain threshold that the NCAA has established. I don't know it right off the top of my head, but if temperatures go below that threshold, the games will not be played. And it's a safety concern. Safety.
So speaking of bad weather, there was a blizzard of amazing lacrosse this weekend, Dix.
Look at you.
Yeah, so another crazy weekend. It was a great week for home
underdogs. A maelstrom.
Huge week for home underdogs like Duke, Towson, Michigan, even Denver, if you want to call them a slight dog at home against a team ranked ahead of them. And one-goal wins for Penn State, Virginia, Syracuse, Yale, Denver, Michigan. So a lot of exciting games. Let's jump into it.
Yeah.
First one that really we want to talk about is Hofstra 11, UNC 9.
Hofstra's a team that came into this game 4-0, and people are commenting that, the Pride are a really good lacrosse team, but not many people, myself included, had them ranked in the top 20 for the Inside Lacrosse Maverick poll. Because when you look at their schedule, they got the win over Princeton, which all of a sudden is huge. But then you see wins over Monmouth, New Jersey Institute of Technology, Georgetown. Like, okay, yeah, well, you know what? If they do well against North Carolina this week, maybe they get into the top 20. Well, not only did they do well, they went down to Chapel Hill and won against the North Carolina team, coming off a huge road win against Denver. So how about if you're North Carolina? You lay an egg at home to Johns Hopkins, you get whooped by 8 goals. Then you go out to Denver, a place you haven't won. I don't even know if they've ever won out in Denver. And the Pioneers have had their number in the NCAA tournament the last, over the last 6 years or so.
Had a lot of people's number in the NCAA tournament over the last
6 years.
True,
but North Carolina in particular, it was 3 years in a row where Carolina played Denver in the NCAAs, where it was first round or quarterfinals. And they come home. And then they drop a 2-goal decision on Hofstra. I think this speaks to a Hofstra team coached by Seth Tierney, that's been down the last couple of years. If you recall last season, 2016, Josh Byrne burst onto the scene. Yeah. Big wins early in the season, and then the Hofstra just kind of struggled and tailed off, especially when conference play got underway. This is a group that graduated Sam Linares, that meant so much to their program over the last 4 years. You know, but now you got a new cast of characters. I mean, you look at this game from the weekend. Josh Byrne dropped 3 goals. Ryan Tierney, Seth's son, Under Armour All-American, has gotten his college career off to a tremendous start. This is a very good young team. I think the biggest difference, though, in this ball club is their goaltending. And they've gotten tremendous goaltending out of Kincannon, doing a great job. He's established himself early in the year as being one of the best goaltenders in the country, Jack Kincannon. This past weekend was no different. Tremendous game for Kincannon against a very talented North Carolina team, the defending national championship team, and he was a difference in this ball game. So Hofstra's a team playing with a ton of confidence right now, and just doing great things. And they're at 5-0.
Yeah, are you looking at their schedule?
Yeah.
So they have 3 home games coming up against Providence, Stony Brook, and St. John's.
All winnable.
All winnable. At Fairfield, at Delaware, winnable. Then they play in April, home against Drexel, home against UMass, winnable. They could be undefeated going into their game against Towson.
No question. They could, and that'll be...
At Towson the last weekend in April.
And that'll be a huge, obviously, conference game, but, you know...
Could be for the conference championship.
It could be, yeah, for the number one seed. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. You know, another player that stepped up, Dylan Alderman, 6 points, 3 goals, 3 assists. And you have to like the way this game went. It was a slugfest. It was toe-to-toe. I mean, you're looking at so many different ties. But when that game got to 8-8, that's when Hofstra made their move and scored three straight goals to take an 11-8 lead and then held off North Carolina for the final 11-plus minutes after Tagliaferri for Carolina made it 11-9. So, you know, that's where goaltending comes in. That's also where discipline and playing really smart, fundamental, sound lacrosse for Hofstra. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, just a tremendous win for the Hofstra Pride. Kincannon with 13 saves in the game. Just played really, really well. And this is a... They benefited from a lot of Carolina turnovers. So Carolina very sloppy at home. 17 turnovers, I think, ultimately in the game that cost North Carolina dearly, 9 of which were in the second half. So, I mean, you can't say enough good things about this Hofstra win, and, you know, will they be able to keep this momentum going?
Yeah, it's, again, we're just looking at it. Last week we mentioned, is there any team that you think can go undefeated? It's not going to be easy for anyone. It never is. But they have a favorable schedule lined up. The way they're playing, indications are that they have a shot at it. So best of luck to them the rest of the season. Let's get right to their chief rival in their conference at this point. Towson hosts Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, comes away with a huge 13-8 win on Saturday over at Johnny United Stadium. And Towson pretty much led this throughout and then finished off the Jays in the second half.
Another situation, so Towson, an uneven week, not this past week, but the week before, losing to Loyola, and then they squeaked out a win against a UMBC
8-6.
Team. 8-6. Yeah, which, by the way, UMBC has improved rapidly.
Yeah, nice win over Marist.
Nice win, you know, and they beat Mercer the week before, so UMBC getting things on the right track. There were a lot of folks that dropped Towson out of their top 20 last week completely. I was not one of them.
Of course not.
No, I thought that was absurd when I heard people dropping Towson out of the top 20 to make room for other teams. I mean, this is a top 20 team. I've actually got them in my top 10. I had them at 9 last week, probably a little too ambitious, but I thought that this team was going to bounce back. I didn't know if they would beat Hopkins, but I knew they would bounce back, and they were better than the loss to Loyola and only a 2-goal win over UMBC, and they bounced back in tremendous fashion.
Yeah, they were number 16 last week, and they move up to number 11 this week.
So I had them 9 last week, and I've got them 6 this week, which, again, it might be a little bit too high, but I like this team. And it starts at the faceoff dot with Alex Woodall, the big cat.
A transfer from High Point.
When he was in high school, the big cat was public enemy number 1. He was a guy bigger and stronger than most kids. Creative on faceoffs, to say the least. Creative. But referees caught up to that, basically at the behest of other coaches in the league. Goes to High Point. Doesn't play great as a freshman, and I don't know what circumstances led him to Towson, but since he's been with the Tigers, he has been fantastic. And he was fantastic on Saturday. I believe he had, what, a goal and two assists, or maybe 2-1. I know he had multiple points for the Big Cat. And he's a game changer. And when you think about the lineage of Towson faceoff men, I mean, Mark Goers, Tim Lucky, you know, guys that have just been great faceoff guys. He's, you know, doing a tremendous job for Towson. When you get this offense possessions, you know, Ryan Drenner and Joe Sider, you know, they've got Joe Mazza, who's a tremendous player.
John Mazza. Yeah.
Always get Joe and John mixed up. But, I mean, this is a really, really talented team. And they can go far. And when you have a faceoff man like Woodall that can get you the possessions and the touches, we talk about it with Penn State all the time. You get this Towson offense, the ball, they're gonna do some things with it. And his work was allowed them to have possessions and really keep Hopkins at bay.
Yeah, watching this game, Logan was giving up some goals from deep, and one of them from Woodall from 16 yards out. Hopkins made a change, brought in Brock Turnbaugh, and Logan struggled in this one.
Yeah, he did, and this is you know, really the second game in a row that he struggled a little bit. You know, coming off of a career game against North Carolina, and then
that's what's so surprising is that how well he played against North Carolina,
right?
Where he was saving a lot of those outside shots.
Well, the kind of the book on Logan is, and when you look at Logan and Turnbaugh, Logan is more athletic and better at the clearing game than Brock Turnbaugh. It's kind of been established that Turnbaugh's the better stopper. He's the better save maker between the pipes. So, but obviously Hopkins has decided to go with Logan, and they're clearing the ball much better this season. If you're a Hopkins fan, and I've, you know, being an alum, I've been in a couple text threads and conversations with, you know, what's going on, you know, 4-0, everybody was so excited. Now two turkeys in a row. Losing to Princeton and then losing to Towson. I mean, they were, you know, Hopkins was in this game, no question. You know, down 6-4 at half, and Towson just made more plays than Johns Hopkins did in the second half. But I think, you know, if you are Hopkins, you're a little concerned with the goaltending.
Yeah, Logan is at 48% save percentage.
Not good. Not good. And you know, so I'd imagine practice this week is going to be very, very spirited. I mean, you know, Hopkins is no stranger to goalie controversies. You know, Eric Schneider a couple years ago really struggled, and you know, take it even farther than that. Mike Gavazdin was the starter for a while, and you know, kind of yo-yoing with other goalies. I mean, it just seems like Hopkins hasn't had that like incumbent goaltender since Jesse Schwartzman. If you really want to think about it, they just really haven't had. You know, Pierce Bassett. I take that back. Pierce Bassett was solid for the time that he was
been
at Johns
Hopkins. Second teamer one year, second team All American. One season.
I'm not quite sure, but also keep in mind that Pierce's team struggled. You know, more than a lot of teams in Hopkins history, and actually. You know, Pierce Bassett, great guy, you know, good goaltender, but he was the goalie of the Hopkins team that did not make the NCAA tournament a few years back. So, there's some goaltending concerns for the Blue Jays moving forward, no question.
Yeah, another game that was extremely exciting. Fans had to wait for Sunday for this one. But
Sunday. Come see the Denver Pioneers play host to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Another sold out Peter Barton Stadium. They've had some amazing games out there, right?
Peter Barton knows how to throw a party.
I know he does. Denver gets an 11-10 win over Notre Dame. Connor Cannizzaro, a lot of people's preseason favorite for the Twarton Player of the Year award, scores the game winning goal with a second
no
left.
Time, like,
no
yeah,
time
yeah.
left. He goes behind the cage, drops the ball, picks it up, has a presence of mind to get around and get the shot off in time. And they get a thrilling 11-10 win over the Irish in a really well-played game.
And that's you're seeing the rule change from a couple years ago of a goal being good at the end of time, not when the ball goes crosses the goal line, but much like college basketball, when the ball's been released before that clock hits triple zeros, it's a good goal. And that's exactly what happened this past weekend with Denver. I mean, Cannizzaro just falling away from the goal, back to the cage, just whips it over his shoulder and is able to put it past Shane Doss. So, I mean, that's just that is a big boy play. That is a Tuoretan type. That's a statement. I mean, that is a statement.
You know, in football, they used to say the Heisman moment for a college football player.
Right.
You know, Johnny Manziel had it. Cam Newton had it. Is this his Tuoretan moment?
Could be. I mean, it could be. I think he's going to have a whole lot more throughout this season. But, you know, if the season were to end today, pardon me, you know, March 14th, 15th, March 13th?
March 13th.
I think Cannizzaro is probably walking away with the Tuoretan.
Yeah, he has 15 goals and 11 assists. His team is 5-1 and regains the top spot in the Maverick media poll this week.
What I love about this Denver team and this game in particular was the definition of balance. I mean, you look at Cannizzaro 2-1, Ethan Walker 1-2, Tyler Pace 2-1, Colton Jackson 2-1, Connor Donahue 2-1. 3 points, you know, five guys with 3 points. And then you have Austin French with 2 goals. You know, balance. You know, this team is very, very difficult to defend. They get extended possessions. They tire your defense out. Their fundamentals, their stick work is excellent. I thought that they got better goaltending this week from Alex Reddy, even though he was just 50%. He wasn't below that 50%, which he has been in a couple of other games this season. So I think just a great team effort by Denver. So I think we're seeing a star emerge in South Bend in Ryder Garnsey. That was a big takeaway from this game. 2 goals and 4 assists. I mean, he's playing terrific lacrosse. He's so dynamic, very creative. You know, Mikey Wynn, 2 goals and 2 assists. I think Notre Dame, however, needs more production out of their first midfield, in particular Sergio Perkovic. You know, the first team All-American, 1 goal, only 2 shots. Sean Mayle, the long stick midfielder for Denver, did a great job against him. You know, Bill Tierney's a lot like Bill Belichick. He takes away the knowns. He takes away your superstars and makes you beat him with, you know, talented players, but secondary players. You know, I think, you know, Drew Shantz, 2 goals. Brian Willits had a goal for Notre Dame. But he took away the big boy. You know, he took away the main guy. And, Denver gets a win. And in my poll, number 2, Inside Lacrosse Maverick poll, back at number 1 for Denver. I'm not going to argue with that, a huge win for the Denver Pioneers.
Moving on, Duke and Loyola got together down in Durham. Duke is in need of a good win, and they get one, 15-7 in a game that really was never that close, Dix.
Well, I would say that this is the second quality win for Duke.
Richmond's a good win.
Sure.
But that was a come-from-behind one-goal win, I think.
Yeah. So you're talking more from start-to-finish domination kind of thing. Well, you know, the Richmond game saw Duke storm back from a huge deficit, outscoring Richmond 7-3 in the second half to take a huge win. This one, they got the job done a little bit earlier, tied at 3, and the Blue Devils, got a huge run and turned a 3-3 game into an 11-4 bulge. And you always look for kind of turning points in a season, and I think that comeback last week against Richmond could be that turning point for Duke. They took advantage of the opportunity to against a really good Loyola team. Struggled defensively a little bit, and they also, I mean, geez, you know, Loyola's still, you know, kind of struggling with their goaltending. But you have to love that run that Duke went on to take this win. And, hats off to the Blue Devils. You know, if you're Loyola, now lost another game. Is that their third loss of the season?
Third
loss?
I guess it's third.
You know, so you're in, you know, not even in mid-March yet. You've got 3 losses, so... You know, obviously the Patriot League becomes that much more important, but you see Loyola struggling a little bit, Navy struggling mightily, losing to Lafayette this weekend. Army has emerged as probably the team to beat in the Patriot League. You know, I mean, Loyola, Brian Sherlock, 3 goals. Pat Spencer continues to, to play well and produce 2 goals against Duke. I'm looking to see. No assist, though. No, 1 assist. I'm looking at the wrong thing. These box scores are becoming good. Everybody has like a different box score, a way to do things.
Yeah, can we get a universal box score?
That'd be great. That'd be great. And actually, Loyola does a really good job of theirs. I was just looking in the wrong place. But anyway, you know, 2-1 for Spencer. Romar Dennis with a goal. I think, you know, Loyola is getting no bench production right now. They're getting no production from their secondary guys. We talked about Notre Dame's secondary guys stepping up against Denver. You know, Loyola's secondary guys really aren't, you know, second midfield, that type of thing, you know. So they need a little bit more production. When you look at the saves,
they play both goalies. Loyola did.
Yeah, they split time because I think, you know, Stover has been struggling this year, and Grant, you know, Lamone has shown the ability to lead this defense and play well, but you know they're obviously
a tough game too. He gave up 9 goals, had 2 saves.
Yeah. Yeah, and so they're struggling mightily at the goaltender position. And look at the flip side, Danny Fowler gives up 6 goals and saves 14. So, you know, better goaltending, better execution, and that led to the Duke win.
Dix, last game I want to look at, home underdogs, big weekend for them. Michigan gets a 13-12 home win over Penn. Penn had been playing extremely good lacrosse, still is, but Michigan gets a win they can hang their hat on.
Hats off to John Paul and the Michigan Wolverines. So a week ago, we were talking about them setting a program record with 6 wins. And it's all about, like, where are you going to go from there? You know, when you're a team in a program like Michigan, you're trying to build on your successes to build a winner, to build a consistent winner. And this is a huge, huge step in the right direction. And you could tell Michigan right away, you know, first takeaway, they were focused and ready to play. They come out, they're up 5-1. After the first period. And then they played steady from that point on. They had to weather a tremendous Quaker storm, if there is such a thing, at the end of the game. I mean, they built a lead of 10-4, and then you just see Penn storm back with 7 goals in the fourth quarter. Just a huge win for Michigan, not only to get out to that quick start and show that they were ready to play, you know, once they stepped onto the field, but also the ability to hold Penn off. I mean, that's not the way the script is supposed to go. Penn's supposed to come back and win this game, and Michigan did not allow it. You know, Ian King, 3 goals. Brent Noseworthy, maybe one of the best names in college lacrosse, dropped a hat trick as well. This is a team that was hurt a lot by injury last year. Michigan was. Ian King missed substantial time a year ago. He can play, and I think that this team with a new goalie. You know, Michigan has a new goalie after we talked about Gerald Logan. I mean, he spent his first 4 years at Michigan, playing his 5th year at Johns Hopkins. But, you know, Tommy Height has come in and done a nice job so far this season. 9 saves in this game. Made some stops when he needed to in the fourth period. So just a huge win for the Michigan Wolverines, not only getting the 7 wins, but knocking off their first ever top 10, you know, ranked opponent in the Penn Quakers.
Yeah, they have one more game before they hit the Big Ten. They play UMBC at home this weekend, and then they get into their Big Ten schedule. It'll be interesting to see how they fare in that.
And will they be able to handle the success of the Penn win? And UMBC's playing a lot better right now. Ryan Moran has done a nice job with the Retrievers. You know, they've got a little bit of a win streak going. So this is it's not a must-win game for Michigan, but this is a must-continue kind of game, you know, to keep their momentum going.
Dix, you said that the win over Penn was a huge step in the right direction for JP and the Michigan program. You know what else is a huge step in the right direction? Using Sideline Swap.
You don't say.
To get your lacrosse equipment or to sell it. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. Or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. For instance, I'm thinking about putting some of cleaning out my office. Got a lot of Big City Classic, Face Off Classic, some cool memorabilia in my office that I might put on Sideline Swap and see what kind of price I could get for it.
Big City Nights.
Sideline Swap also
you
lets...
You got me rocking.
Oh, great song by the Scorpions.
Scorpions.
Klaus Meiner.
Rudy Schenker. Rudolf Schenker.
And
we will play the rock and roll.
Herman Rarebell playing the bass guitar.
Holy smokes.
Good polls, right? Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely, list in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. That's Sideline Swap. SidelineSWAP.com. Sideline Swap. All right, Dix. Your top five teams. Let's tell me. Let me explain who's the new Maverick Media poll again. Lots of shakeups. We have the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, your squad, coming in at number five.
I had them number five last week as well. Look at me.
Yeah, you're predicting the future. The Terps come in
60% of the time. It works all the time.
We got Rutgers at five, Terps at four, Penn State at three, Notre Dame at two, and Denver at one. Thought that there could be a small chance that Penn State moves up as the undefeated team, coming off a nice win over Harvard, slides into that number one spot. But the voters picked the game of the week, the number one team, Denver, probably correct. Who's in your top five?
Well,
let's go from five back to one.
Yeah, so Rutgers stayed at number five for my my poll. Big win over Stony Brook, 17-4. Maryland, through no fault of their own, slid down one spot for me to number four. They didn't play this weekend. They were idle. Notre Dame, I mean, you know, you go into Denver, lose by one goal. No shame in that. So they dropped from number one to number three for me. Denver jumps from number four to number two. Great win for the Pioneers over Notre Dame, 11-10. And you talk about Penn State. I tried to help them get the number one overall. They're my number one team this week. I had the chance to watch them live against Furman on Tuesday, 12-10 Penn State win. Super impressed.
Called that game.
I called that game on Big Ten Network. Yep, myself and Pete Medhurst. And their offense is awesome. Their offense really is sensational. Great stick work.
What did you think of O'Keefe?
O'Keefe was actually kept under wraps.
Quiet, right?
One goal in that game. But Nick Aponte stepped up for, a goal and four assists. Grant Ament has taken that leap from freshman to sophomore. Nick Spillane had a tremendous game, followed it up after a huge game against Penn with another great game in the midfield. And they run deep in the midfield. You know, you talk about Spillane. They've got Ryan Keenan. They've got Sutton, Florence, Dan Craig. Not James Bond, but a Canadian, Dan Craig. So they're loaded offensively. My concerns for Penn State are on the defensive end. Colby Canese had a really strong game over the weekend against Harvard. I think he made 15 or 16 saves, but he was not on his game against Furman. And I walked away really impressed with the Paladins, too. That's a group with Richie Meade. He's got a couple of players, and you know, it hasn't come together yet for Furman, but I think it will, and they've played a really competitive schedule to open up the season. But again, Penn State offensively, very, very good, and they got my vote for number one this week.
You are one of eight voters in the poll who have them at number one.
I'm so not alone.
You're not alone. Dicks, our Epic Isle Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. Last week we did a poll online and on Twitter. Got almost 1,000 votes for this thing.
Really?
Yeah. So trying to keep the momentum going, but because of our weather and our having to reschedule this a couple of times in order to record right now, we're not going to be able to do it. But I'll give you who our candidates are, and then we'll debate this and pick a winner. So Joe Madsen, freshman from St. John's, had two goals in their 8-9 close loss to Syracuse for St. John's. Griffin Brown of Colgate, three goals, two assists in a 13-6 win over Hobart. And Joey Manown for Duke, three goals and one assist in a 15-7 win over Loyola.
Okay. And Joey Manown is a boy band name, so
yeah,
you should probably vote for him.
Yeah, that's the one I'm going to go with. He had it's a big win for Duke over Loyola. Joey Manown, he is a freshman from Saundersville, Rhode Island. He has nine goals, three assists for 12 points on the season, 3-1 this weekend. And he's fourth on the team in scoring for Duke.
Yeah.
He is our Epic Isle Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. Dix, something came to light last week, and I'd like to dive into this for a little bit. In the Hopkins-Princeton game afterwards, the Atlax Film Room guy, our friend.
Atlax Film Room, everybody's favorite.
He analyzed some video that sort of exposed Zach Currier using an illegal technique where he was grabbing his opponent's stick with his thumb to help him win faceoffs. He won 15 of 19 in that game. He was the Ivy League Player of the Week, and he was also the National Player of the Week. He's called out on this. Terry, Foy, and Quint, they talked about it on their podcast Friday going into this past weekend.
Okay. What'd they say about it?
They discussed it, some history of it. Quint said more or less, guys have been doing this for a long time. It was since the motorcycle grip became very popular, maybe this technique is something the officials aren't looking for anymore, mm-hmm. and that may be why they missed it several times in the Hopkins-Princeton game. What I want to know is just get your opinion on some things. First, we'll do it as you as a player, and a coach and a fan, and then you can put your officiating hat, your stripes on, and give me some of your officiating take on it. But where do you draw the line as a fan and a former player on it being gamesmanship versus breaking the rules? And I'll put a couple other things. You know, Quint used the analogy of a baseball pitcher who might, you know, scuff up a baseball with his belt buckle or a piece of sandpaper or something he keeps in his hat. And then after the game, a couple of fans get foul balls and they look at them and see the scuffs in the same place and say, well, what's going on here? In lacrosse, there's other ways to do it. It's not just this. You know, a faceoff guy could pinch a stick or, an attackman, midfielder, someone could have a deeper pocket than is legal. In women's lacrosse, they actually have a rule where when you score a goal, you throw your stick down because girls were scoring and kind of pulling their stick into them or huddling up with their friends when they celebrate and pulling their strings back down. Which, by the way, in women's lacrosse, is there anything better? Like the idea that you're allowed to score a goal and throw your stick and celebrate?
Well, or
almost seems like you're taunting your opponent.
Well, and the other one is you score a goal and you slam it down emphatically,
like drop the mic,
yeah.
drop the stick.
And then you're hooting and hollering.
It just always looks so cool when girls do it. I think they should add this to boys' lacrosse just so that
Why not?
Have this. But there is gamesmanship. There's things you do, maybe jawing with your opponent, trying to get a mental edge on them. You know, in football, as an example, in a pile, you might, do some things that's beyond ethical or mm-hmm. within the rules. But there's, Quint made a point of it's not really cheating unless you get caught and that the official should have seen it in that game. Where do you take on that as a former player and as a fan of the game, gamesmanship versus playing outside the rules a little bit?
Well, let me start off my comments. So that's a lot of meat on that bone.
Yeah, sorry.
And let me start my comments. So as an official, I will not break our policy of commenting on games. So I cannot speak directly to Zach Currier and that Princeton Johns Hopkins game and the job the officials did on that. So I want to make that
not
clear.
Asking you to.
Right. So as a fan, as a coach, as someone who played the game, look, I was always kind of a, I never, you could take it back to when the old leather gloves and you used to be able to cut the palms out, cut the fingers out. And then the NCAA said you can't do that anymore. So you had guys that would sand down the palms of their gloves.
So it'd be thinner.
Yeah, and I used to do that. Was it cheating? No. But ultimately, that hole, opened up because the gloves would be wet or just get worn through practice, through games, and then you have to get a new pair of gloves. But you would take it up to the nth degree. So
I attribute, in football, where you have to wear pads in certain places.
Right.
But guys will trim the pads down, cut them to as though they're so small, so they're almost they don't have knee pads that might hinder or encumber them when they run, to make it their pants as light and as tight as possible.
Well, look at lacrosse. You have to wear shoulder pads, and guys wear as thin of a shoulder pad as they can get. You might see hockey pads from the 1970s, Cooper, the small, and they're white and kind of cloth material, and they're almost yellowed because they're so old. And also arm pads, guys are required to wear arm pads. You'll see guys with arm pads that, look like an eye patch.
Right.
And now you're seeing guys pull the arm pads all the way up to their biceps.
Right.
You try to get away with as much as you can. That's gamesmanship. I think what we saw on film, it was illegal. It's illegal. If you look at the rules of the game, you're not allowed to grab another player's cross. Fans are thirsty. It depends on, which side you fall on. Let's look at the.
It absolutely does.
Let's look at the Deflategate. Tom Brady allegedly deflating footballs made it all the way to the Supreme Court.
This is ridiculous.
It made it to the Supreme Court. A guy deflating footballs made it to the Supreme Court. When the Patriots won this past Super Bowl, the talk was somewhat about the comeback and about the greatness of Brady and the greatness of Belichick, but it was more about, we can't wait to see Roger Goodell have to hand the Super Bowl trophy to Tom Brady. Will Tom Brady whack him over the head with it? Is he going to punch him in the groin? Is he going to, you know, karate chop him in the No. He didn't do any of that. He took it and he smiled and he was like, up yours, bud. You know, so I think, you know, if Tom Brady were Drew Brees, would that have been as big a deal to football fans? I mean, people hate Tom Brady outside of New England. So I don't think that this incident is on that big of a scale. Now, general officiating commentary. I ref games where guys were using their, like, facing off and putting the ball in their hand and throwing it to open space. And I had benches telling me that the face-off guy was doing it. And I'm standing there watching and looking for it, and I couldn't see it being done. If you recall, I guess it was the mid to late 2000s, similar to Lax Film Room, showing the frame-by-frame of the incident, you had photographers that caught certain face-off men, you know, frame by frame, you know, motorcycle grip, grabbing the ball in the palm of their hand, throwing it to open space. That's how they were winning face-offs. That's how that practice came to light. Officials started looking at it much closer. Caught it sometimes. Other times you weren't able to catch it. I have to imagine, you know, the stick grabbing that was done in this particular instance was done so fast. And I remember watching that game on television.
Never noticed.
And you could hear the Hopkins bench yelling, "He's grabbing him. He's grabbing him." So you're being told by a coach and coaching staff, probably being told by the player, you're looking for it and you still can't catch it. Like, that's how quick it can happen at the faceoff. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying kind of is what it is. And the games that I officiated where another team was accusing the other player of putting the ball in his hand and moving it, I never saw it with my naked eye. Then I saw pictures afterward, and sure as the sky is blue, it was happening. So it's a challenge. Now, where do you want to go from here? I mean, look, it's illegal.
So anytime I think we're on board, there's such a thing as gamesmanship.
Sure.
And that as a player, as long as you're not doing something that is completely outside the spirit of the game, it's game on. You get away with as much as you can without cheating. And then the other side of this is, as an official, and this is what I was really looking for from you on that end, is that you are looking for stuff.
Absolutely.
But you absolutely have to see it with your own eyes before you're going to call it, as you would any other play throughout the game.
And here's the other thing. The face-off is and has been the most contentious issue in the game on field over the last, 10, 15 years.
There's been a lot of rule changes.
And let me tell you something. As an official, when you call a guy for jumping, or you call a guy for, withholding, or you call a guy for grabbing another guy's stick or grabbing the ball with his hand or using the hand to gain advantage, the other bench is screaming at you that it didn't happen. No, you got it. No, he didn't do that. So it's like, I don't want to sound like a punk, but you kind of need the coaches to buy in to clean this thing up. And if it's their guy getting away with stuff, oftentimes they're not going to say anything, you know? And I'm not pointing the fingers at anybody. This is a general comment.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for.
And this is at the youth, high school, collegiate, professional, any level you want. You know, if you call a violation against a guy, it's like you're all of a sudden the referee's like public enemy number one, you know? When you have pregame discussions with coaches, you know, "Coach, do you have anything for me or for us?" Yes.
When does this happen? Like how early before the game?
So
an hour before the game, half an hour before the game?
Per rule. Or per protocol, I should say, policy of NILOA, National Intercollegiate Lacrosse Officials Association, we are mandated to be on the field at least 30 minutes before a game. When I say we, the officials. And you have that pregame meeting with coaches where you get captains, you ask, you certify the, all the players, and then you ask the coaches typically, you know, do you have anything, any concerns, any questions for us? And 8 times out of 10, those concerns are the other team's face-off guy. And, you know, they've got tape. You know,
they watch a lot of film.
A lot of film, and that's a huge discussion. So, officials, we are well-educated, trust me.
Now, you guys have your own seminars before the season starts and in the off-season where you're being evaluated, you're being reviewed, you're going over the new rules, old rules. Are you guys watch film during those sessions too? Like if there's a new rule, like, hey, when this happens, this is what you're supposed to do?
So you have a national meeting that takes place in December for my district. That's part of the coaches' convention, and it's been in Baltimore the last couple of years. And there's always a rules video that's shown. Based on, you know, here's what good looks like and here's what not so good looks like. And that's typically made public. I don't know if this year's edition is 2017 is public simply because there weren't that many rule changes, just a couple of variations on rules.
Where do you get the footage from? Do you take footage from actual games?
The rules committee will take footage from televised games, typically in the NCAA tournament, because every game in the NCAA tournament is televised by ESPN networks. So typically that's where it comes from.
And why wouldn't they make that public so that everyone has an example? Because it calls out kids who are doing
illegal
things.
There's a disclaimer by whoever voices it over at the beginning saying this video is not intended to embarrass any player, coach, whatever, official, blah, blah, blah. It's typically made, you know, you can just go to
the NCAA
rules website.
I'm sure every sport does.
I just haven't seen the 2017 video yet. It doesn't mean it's not coming out, but or you know, it's also maybe a budgetary thing. I don't know. Don't ask. I'm a soldier. I'm not, you know, general by any stretch of the imagination. But to answer your question, you have your meeting, and then my local association, the SLOA, the Southern Lacrosse Officials Association, meets every Monday throughout the season, starting in February. So every Monday in February, every Monday in March, and then you kind of stagger the meetings after that. Maybe once or twice in April, and then I think once in May. But you're always going over game situations. You're showing video. You're having discussion. But more importantly than that, NILOA throughout the season sends out memos all the time on different hot topics, if you will. It could be about the faceoff. It could be about high hits. It could be about bench decorum. It could be about paying better attention to offsides. Just stuff, you know. So memos come out frequently throughout the season from our leadership, and it's our responsibility to watch, read, be educated on all these things. So it is a constant process with officials. If anybody thinks that officiating, you know, you kind of meet once in the preseason, then you're off on your own. No, it is a constant education for officials at all levels.
Dix, this is why you're the man. And why I enjoy this so much. You're like Thomas More, a man for all seasons.
I just hope I don't get in trouble. Like, you know.
You won't. But a former player, you know, at Hopkins, played at the highest level you can play. Lacrosse dad, fan.
Yeah. Coach.
ESPN Big Ten announcer, lacrosse analyst, and officiating NILOA, SLOA.
I got 10 job, Mom. I got like 13 jobs.
You're hands, your tiny hands are all over the sport of lacrosse.
Tiny. These are decent sized mitts.
Are. They are.
I mean, they're
actually,
not like
they are.
They're not.
They
they're not like, you know.
I mean, you're
midget.
You're not palming a basketball.
No. I'm not Patrick Spencer from Loyola. Yeah. I mean, that guy's got huge, huge hands.
But credit to you. Thank you for explaining that. I think that's very helpful for people to understand the process that officials go through and the way they look at things and how it's a constant. Education throughout the season.
Well, let me highlight something else too. You mentioned the strings and the stick checks in the women's game. So, you know, the girls have to throw down their sticks immediately. In the men's game, it's a random check. Officials can check at any time during the course of a game. So it is in the rule book that if a player does score a goal, or I should take it back a step. If you request a stick.
How are those checked? I've always, like, I know that you can request it. It usually seems to happen between quarters, but
it's
can
random.
It happen at any time?
Any time during a game.
And how many can a coach have? He can't say, I want you to look at every starter
on
this team.
What I'm saying is this is – so I'm trying to – I don't know what how long the random stick check on the officials has been in effect. I want to say maybe 5 or 6 years. But it used to be you only would check a stick if a coach requested a stick to be checked. And it's always been kind of taboo because then it's an assumption that that coach thinks you're cheating. Again, it goes back to what we were talking about with face-offs, gamesmanship, cheating, and all that other kind of stuff. So they put the onus on the officials, and you know, there's a variety of times during the course of a game officials will check sticks. If you request a stick from a player, and you mentioned the pulling on the shooting string, like if you when you request, you know, number four, I need your stick, you request that stick, if they don't hand it over to you right away, if they pull the shooting strings, they punch the pocket, whether it's on the inside or the outside, if they manipulate that stick in any way, it's an automatic flag down. You've got them all ready, and you don't even check the stick after that. You're like, you're gone for a minute, you know, non-releasable. What you did see with the stick checks, like after goals were scored, where guys would, you know, put it close to them and tug and keep it away from the officials' view, and it was called on television a couple of times. But again, officials can't see it. You know, players would have certain celebrations, or teams would have certain celebrations. Also, the old way of doing it would be like at the end of the first period and the third period. Well,
yeah, that's what I thought.
If you had an attackman with a phony stick, he would either sub himself out of the game with a few seconds left in the first and or third quarter,
or
would switch sticks.
So he'd use his regulation stick during the first quarter, and then in the second quarter pick up his...
Maybe. I mean, I'm not... Yeah, that would happen at once. So by having it random, you know, coaches and players don't know when it's coming. And it's not designed to bust people. It's just designed to keep the integrity of the game.
Yeah. So I feel like this used to be more of a problem, people using illegal sticks. And it's happened in a couple of big games over the course of the last 10, 15 years where I can't remember who it was, but there was an illegal stick. And if you get caught with that, it's an unreleasable penalty, but it can be – is it 4 minutes?
No. So if it's something like a deep pocket, something that's correctable, it's a one-minute non-releasable. The player is allowed to fix the stick, and the stick can return to the game. If it's something more that the stick has been manipulated, i.e. pinched, or you're using a stick that doesn't fit the dimensions of NCAA regulation, that is a three-minute non-releasable.
3 minutes.
And the stick is out of the game. The stick cannot return to the contest.
So I feel like this was a problem more, like a frequent problem. What percent of, and just, again, however you want to approach this as a fan, as a former player, as an official, let's say in 2000, how many sticks, a percentage, would you say were illegal in a Division I men's game? If there's
that's
compared to now,
that's like, too hard.
Do you think it's less now?
I think it is less now. I do think it's less now. I think now your illegal sticks are more pocket depth. Pocket. It's more pocket.
Technology has also helped.
Oh, yeah.
Make it easier to play, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like from when you were a kid playing, you probably had a wooden stick.
No, I never had a wooden stick, but I had an old Sam, an STX Sam was my first stick.
But just the difference between when you were a kid
wooden
and what
stick.
Your kids
Christ,
are playing
I'm 45
with.
Years old,
I don't
dude.
Know.
Seriously.
But you're a man of tradition and
yeah, but I would never use a wooden stick, for God's sakes.
So
my dad played with a wooden stick.
But the difference in technology between what your kids are using and what you used is night and day, right?
Oh, when we got the laser light, like we thought that was, and it was. I mean, it was advancement at the time with the pinched head and all that, but I mean, you know, growing up, it was the Brine Super Light 2, or Super Light series, I should say. You had, and then you had the STX Sam and the Barney. The Barney was the defensive
Barney.
Stick. That was it.
You know where you probably can get these? Sideline
Swap.
Go on Sideline Swap, and you can probably get some of this old school stuff. Yeah, great stuff, Dix. Let's get into our weekly favorite segment.
Oh, the give and go.
The give and go. It's time for the give and go.
All right.
And it's March Madness.
Yeah.
What a time of year.
Came in head to toe dressed as a Duke basketball player. Good God.
I have to explain. I get a lot of free Duke stuff. My wife's best friend is on the staff at Duke. She works in the athletic department. And her husband is on the basketball staff. And they are very generous and send us a lot of gear that is dope. It is very nice stuff. You've already requested some stuff
from Dover, Delaware, a 5'9" sophomore wearing number 4, Dan Flynn. I mean, that's how they should announce you.
Newark, brother.
When you get off the elevator and walk into the inside lacrosse aisle, you've got your
north of the canal.
You've got your long
302.
All right, I'm sorry. What's your hometown? Tower Hill? No, you're Tower Hill High School. Newark.
Yeah.
From Newark, Delaware. But you got the long sleeve Duke Never Stops.
I'm going to edit all this out, by the way.
Are you really?
Well, I wasn't expecting to come in here today. Again, this is what I was wearing around the house.
Why are you going to edit this out?
I'm not going to edit
this
out.
That's not cool.
I'm not going to edit
this out. Just because you basically have like the Duke like summer wardrobe. I mean, you've got the sweat jacket. You've got the sweatpants.
It's March Madness. I'm getting excited.
It's almost like you're ready for shoot around.
Yes.
You are ready for shoot around.
I actually can.
And when Coach K looks down the bench, he's like, Flynn, get in there. Give me a rebound.
Did you see Modern Family? You watch that show?
I do. I haven't watched it in a while.
Oh, God. Last week, Phil had to play in this school charity basketball game, and he missed. He airballed a free throw the year before.
Uh-huh.
He's been practicing nonstop to get ready for this. And DeAndre Jordan and Charles Barkley come into the gym while he's warming up, and it throws him off his game. It's funny.
That is a good show.
If you like that show. Yeah.
I like the Goldbergs better. I watch it.
That's good too, man.
Wednesday night's tough, though. We have practices and stuff, so got to on demand some of those things.
Yeah, that's my must-see TV day. And Black-ish. Oh, my God. Black-ish makes me laugh out loud. This show's great. All right, so favorite things about March Madness. All right. So I know you're not the basketball fan that I am, but
no.
I know you do love hoops and sports in
sure.
general. So I've got a lot here. And I guess.
First of all, Duke gear.
No. Actually, I don't wear that much stuff.
Is 1 through 5.
I usually don't leave that. I live in Maryland, and they're still, even though they're not in the same league anymore, I walk around. I get some nasty looks from people. So I usually don't leave my house wearing too much Duke gear.
What is that? Velvet? Your Duke sweatsuit? Velvet? Look at you.
It's velour. All right, so the bracket show was yesterday, and a lot of people think that's the kickoff to March Madness, and it's a lot of fun. But there's nothing like when you first get that bracket in your hands, when you see it and it's printed out on a piece of paper, and you got, you know, the office pool. Mm-hmm. So that's my number one thing, is the filling out the bracket for your office pool. It gets, and the office pool can really bring people together, because it really doesn't matter what you know or how much you know. Anybody can win that. It could be Phyllis from accounting. It could be Toby from human resources. It could be
the Nard Dog.
It could be the Nard Dog or Jim and Dwight. It doesn't matter. It could be anybody in the office who wins that thing. There's people who just do by team color. There's what mascot's better. You know, if Kansas is playing
Rhode Island,
you'd look at the Ram versus a Jayhawk, and mm-hmm. you'd be like, a Ram. Ram's tougher than a Jayhawk, right? So I'll take the Ram over the. So there's people who do it that way, and then there's people who know what's going on. There's people who love to pick their 5-12 upset, or the 4-13, or you know. So getting that bracket for the first time, filling out the office pool, that's my number one.
Okay.
Number two is the buzzer beaters. And the little guy can win one of those games, it's pretty cool. Yeah,
coming down to court, the shot. Oh, it goes.
And it's you know, some of the most famous plays in all of basketball: Tyus Edney driving the length of the court and laying it in, Christian Laettner hitting his last second shot.
Duke reference.
It's referenced as the best play in the history of college basketball.
Oh wait, no. Lorenzo Charles taking the errant Derrick Wittenberg
buzzer beater. There you go.
Better than any late shot.
Bryce Drew, I think, when he played for Valparaiso.
No.
Yeah, all these memories that we have are pretty clear in our mind, you know. And then that's my second thing, and then my third thing is the wagering. For about the last 15 years, my best friends from high school, we usually get together and we go to Las Vegas. And we get there on Wednesday night, leave on Saturday, you watch the first round games. That's about all you can really handle. 3 nights in Las Vegas,
yeah.
Sit around the pool, the Hard Rock Hotel, watch all the games. It's the best fun. Pretty regular going there. Last few years have been tough. Little kids,
mm-hmm.
some work things. One guy's got some older kids, and they have spring break, so he's in Florida right now.
Life just gets in the way.
It does. It ruins things that are traditions. But we still try to get together. So we go there, and when I worked in college athletics, it was a little bit of a bummer. You know, I'm a pretty stand-up guy. I would never wager on any of the games. my degenerate friends would bet on everything. But I, you know, as an NCAA employee, I was technically not supposed to gamble on college basketball or any other college sport. So I didn't. But once I started working here at Inside Lacrosse, it became fair game. So it became.
And now you're a full blown gambling just mess.
No, I'm not. My friends bet on everything. Right. There's two of them in particular on everything. They're the guys who bet on how long the national anthem will be in the Super Bowl and all those little side wagers.
Yeah.
But what we've done a couple times over the last several years is do a parlay bet. Where each of us, there's six of us, we'll each pick one game, put in $20 or something like that each, or sometimes more, and pick one game, one outcome. But you parlay it into the six. We got to hit all six bets. Mm-hmm. So it might be I'll take this team, I'll take the over-under in this one I like, I'll take this or that. We hit it 1 year.
Look at you.
Yeah, we won like $8,000.
Whoa.
On a $160 bet. It was awesome. And that experience of being with your friends when that's happening.
Right.
I remember when our first trips out to Vegas, you can go into like a ballroom and they'll have movie screens and they'll have all the games on in at the same time. And I was watching one game. It was like a 20-point deficit for one team. Mm-hmm. And I didn't completely understand what was going on. And, a team scores a shot at the end. And I see like a group of 12 guys go berserk, mm-hmm. literally go crazy. And I didn't understand, why are they so excited? That game wasn't even close. And my friend's like, it's the spread. They probably had a huge parlay bet with a bunch of things or a lot of money on the line. And the excitement, that bonding, that fun time you spend with your friends, and even in defeat a couple times where, you know, one guy in particular is the one guy. You get five of the games correct and one guy ruins it for you. Or the guy who picks the first game of the day gets it wrong. He's got to buy drinks for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So anyway, that experience with a friend. So
when you won the $8,000, did that then become, I bet I can kick your butt? $8,000 to whoever can kick like Fight Club, you just go after it?
No, that's right. Not the way it happened.
Okay.
It was over.
Just trying to add
joyful celebration.
Trying to add a little bit more excitement to it. When you go to Buffalo Wild Wings and stuff like that.
Pause the game. No, it was lots of fun.
All right.
But that's mine. So what's yours, Dick? So what do you like about March Madness this time of year?
I think now my favorite thing has become making fun of nerds like you and all your crazy stuff that you have going on.
I'm not alone in this. This is the most popular sporting event.
Well, if I meet anybody else
in
like
the United
you,
States,
I think I more than the World Cup.
A little bit bigger than a World Cup.
I tease. No, it's
the Rugby Cup.
That's cool. That's cool that you like. All
you're too busy officiating games, doing games on TV this time of year.
No, I watch.
But
no,
no
I'm
you have
kidding.
An excuse.
I'm kidding.
This is
I'm
your
kidding.
Full lacrosse season right now.
Right.
I'm a man of many sports allegiances.
You're I watch a good deal of college basketball during March Madness. So I too like the pool, and now that my boys are old enough, especially my older son Matt, we do participate in one pool that I've been doing for probably 15, 16 years, and Matt has been doing it for the last like 6 or 7 years. He's 14, and he actually placed last year. He was in the money.
How many people in this?
I think altogether maybe about 60 or 70 people. So it was like, it was a decent chunk of change that he won. It's a $20 entry fee or $10 or $20 entry fee. And, you know, he won many, many times that. So that's neat. I do like the pool. The other thing that I like is, the David and Goliath. I love the upsets.
Yeah.
I really like – now, I don't like it when it screws up my pool, but I don't know what I'm talking about in the first place, so I really can't get that upset. But the upsets, you know, and it's funny. I don't really pay particular attention to my pools, so I'll turn a game on. Let's say it's Hampton against Missouri. Let's just throw those two teams. I don't even know if they're in the tournament this year.
They are not.
Okay. Well, give me a matchup. Give me a 13-4 or a 14-3, something like that.
Okay. I'll give you a good one here. Let's go with Florida State versus Florida Gulf Coast. The number 3 Seminoles versus the 14 Florida Gulf Coast. Now, that's a game that's going to be playing in Orlando.
Well, give me a Florida Gulf Coast. They're the ones that made that magical run a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, with Andy Enfield, okay, our
give
friend.
Give me something like
coach.
Completely off.
Now
the
he's at USC. He made the tournament again this year.
Great, that's awesome. But give me a game where you know you don't have all this backdrop. Come on, okay. Just give me two teams that you're like. There's no way that this higher
Winthrop
seed is.
And Butler.
Winthrop
is 13. Who's a 13 seed in the South is playing Butler, who's the number four
okay.
seed.
Does Winthrop have a shooting guard named Reggie Washington by any by any chance?
I don't know. I don't know.
Winford and Mortimer. Okay, so you've got 13 Winthrop against 4 Butler.
Yeah.
All right. I'm so ignorant that I could have Butler winning that game, but when I turn the game on and there's like 8 minutes left and Winthrop is up by. It's a close yeah. game. I'm like,
you'll
let's go
excited.
Winthrop.
Yeah,
let's go. Excited. And then Winthrop wins, and I'm like, wow, that was great. That was great that Winthrop knocked off Butler. And then I'll look at my pool and be like, oh, Winthrop just destroyed. I had Butler going to the Elite Eight. Yeah. I'm totally hosed. But I love the upsets yeah. because it's the, you know, it's just the, it's just great. It's just great because you have your. You have your mindset in the power conferences, you know, your ACCs and your Big Tens and your Big 12s and your SECs. And, you know, when these little guys can bump up and you just see the pure joy and elation. And these are teams that typically have guys that have been there for 4 years. You don't have that, you know, mostly with the top programs. Guys stay most of the time one, sometimes two, and then they're gone. So you have these guys making that investment. So I love the upsets. I think, however... And it, I mean, I shouldn't have made fun and called you a nerd earlier because I'm going to nerd it up big time.
Here we go.
The one shining moment. I love one shining moment. The Luther Vandross song. Not the Luther and Teddy Pendergrass. Luther Vandross, Teddy Pendergrass, one shining moment. I think Jennifer Hudson did one a couple
she
years
did,
ago.
Yeah.
Awful. Pant. With a
People
capital
did not like
A.
It.
It was terrible. I love one shining moment. Love one shining moment. It's great.
Well, that's your TV guy and you.
Probably. It's well
Loving
produced.
That stuff.
It's,
yeah.
I like
well,
stuff.
What I always liked about it is that they, you know, they incorporate the biggest moments of the tournament, but they also can somehow they get the stuff from the game that just happened. So,
yeah.
That, you know, you,
well, it's a quick tournament. Well, that's why they have to.
Planning throughout. There's probably
yeah.
a whole production team. That's all they do. You
yeah.
know, the championship game, they're like, you're the one shining moment, guys. You just look for highlights for this and do a storyline, basically.
Well, that's why they're, you know, the broadcasters are typically tap dancing, you know, throughout the last couple of segments of, you know, you have the trophy presentation, interviews, you know, I have to imagine if you're like, when you're interviewing the losing coach, like that's the time that the team is getting the clips from the championship
yeah.
game together for one shining. So I do like one shining moment.
That is super nerdy.
Guilty as charged. I said, I just said
right.
I was going to nerd it up.
That's all right.
I don't spend 3 days listening to it, though, like you do 3 days in Vegas.
Oh.
I don't
no,
spend,
no,
like,
sorry.
I spend, you know, however long the song is, like three
yeah, no,
minutes, and then it's over.
The reason one of the reasons we go is so that we can
you don't have to defend
watch
yourself.
All the games.
You don't
like, take
have,
those
you
days
don't.
Off
You're
from
going
work
to Vegas, you don't
watch.
Have to defend yourself. If you tell me, though, that you're going to do it now at the Horseshoe or something like that, then I'm going to really rip into you.
My mother-in-law, my father-in-law went to the Horseshoe for the first time this weekend.
The first and last time?
They heard there was this great Mexican place in there.
Really?
It's like a taco bar, but someone told them about them trying to go there for like a year, and they finally came up to visit me and my wife this weekend, and they were going there on Saturday night. It wasn't that great. My father-in-law said that was the first and last time he will ever
yeah.
go to the Horseshoe Casino.
I've never been to the Horseshoe.
I've never
I
been there. I drive by it twice a day coming yeah. to Inside La Crosse. I have to yeah. drive by this Horseshoe Casino that's right next to M&T Bank Stadium where the Ravens play.
We've got to get a camera in here because the look of hurt on your face when I just made that crack about 3 days of blah, blah, blah. It was like Ralph Wiggum from Simpsons, where you could just see his heart breaking, you know, and they do it slow-mo. Your face was just like, oh. So maybe not as exaggerated as Ralph Wiggum.
But you know what I'm not looking forward to is the commercials that they play incessantly. You know, whether it's Charles Barkley or Sam Jackson doing like the Capital One, that you'll just see that over and over again.
You know, I don't really. I guess
it's who the CBS or.
Yeah,
Turner and
you
got to
pay the bills,
it.
And people pay
a lot.
The one I'm hoping that the one that I hope doesn't come up is the freaking Viagra commercial that you know with the the chick with like the British accent and stuff. And
or like Cialis, where it's overlooking a cliff and there's two bathtubs.
Yeah. And people, the everybody, sun everybody hangs out like that.
What is that? Who does that? All right. Well, that's our give and go for this week. Dix, before we sign off, let's talk about what we're going to look for this coming week. What games you're looking for. I got four of them. Princeton at Penn. This is the weekend of
before you get there, though, you got Princeton at Rutgers.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you as well.
Yeah, yeah. So Princeton and Rutgers, which is, you know, Dix was going to do that game on Big Ten Network. It's now moved to Wednesday. That'll be a good one.
Yeah, it'll be a great game.
Syracuse.
Towson, Ohio State as well will be a really good game.
Yeah.
Be a really good game.
Syracuse at JHU.
Yeah, always a classic. That game was supposed to be played in the Carrier Dome this year because Hopkins played Syracuse last year at home, but the game was moved to Homewood Field because you got to forgive me, I haven't looked at the women's NCAA bracket, but the potential for Syracuse to host a second round NCAA basketball game was very, very real. So that's why they moved the game to Baltimore. And then the next 2 years, the game will be in Syracuse, Hopkins, Syracuse.
I remember there was something like that it was moved, but I didn't know the reason why. Thank you for clarifying that. A Navy at Loyola.
Big Patriot League game.
Yeah, Lafayette beat Navy this past week.
Navy is 0-2 in the Patriot League. Losses to Lafayette and Boston University. So this is a big, big game for the midshipmen.
Yeah, it's big. And then finally, Notre Dame at Virginia. Virginia had an exciting overtime win over a pretty down Cornell team, 19-18. That was out in California.
Watch that game on YouTube.
Yeah?
Did you watch it?
No.
You got to watch it. Tell me what you think of the announcers.
Okay. I remember last year watching that game, like who played in it last year. I think it was Maryland.
Notre Dame.
Yeah, those guys. It was the same guys?
I can't remember. They were entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah, the guys last year entertaining. I don't think they do a whole lot of lacrosse games.
Yeah.
At a high level.
It was very, very entertaining and a lot of energy and passion.
I'll look it up. I will look up a lot for of energy some of it. And passion. Especially, I'd like to see some of the end of that game anyway. But Virginia was down 6-0, came back.
It was an exciting game.
Yeah.
You know, California fans got a real treat. If you like offense, that was a game
lot of
to
goals.
Watch. Yep.
So those are my four, besides the two midweek games you mentioned, but Princeton at Penn, Syracuse at JHU, Navy at Loyola, Notre Dame at Virginia.
Yeah. Look like great games. Great games.
Yeah, this is going to be an awesome weekend, man. I can't wait. I got between getting snowed in tonight and
potentially
some great lacrosse games and some NCAA hoops coming up. Get NIT games start soon.
I never watched the first four, and oh my God, I never watched the NIT.
All right, I got to clue you in on something though.
Go ahead.
We probably have a lot of Syracuse fans who listen to this. So, are you familiar with Jim Boeheim and what he said about the ACC tournament, which has been in Greensboro, which is kind of like the home of
the
tournament for many years? He pretty much ripped the city of Greensboro, the town of Greensboro, after the first game, saying that it should never be there. It should always be in one of the major cities. He loves it being in New York, obviously, but maybe Atlanta, D.C., New York, rotate between there. It should never be in Greensboro again. It blew up on the Twitter, internet, lots of Jim Boeheim Greensboro stuff. The city of Greensboro trolled him a little bit.
Uh-oh.
Because they lost their game in the first round of the ACC tournament.
Where was it played this year?
At the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Oh, no kidding. So it was in New York?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he made you know
what? I saw that. I watched a little bit of the Notre Dame-Duke game the other night. Yeah, yeah.
So he was saying that it really should be the city of Greensboro came back
and
gave him a bit of a hard time about that. So if you are the first four teams out of the NCAA tournament, that's like a thing. You get the top four seeds in the NIT.
Okay.
All right. And so Syracuse won the first four out. They got a top seed. They play the University of North Carolina, Greensboro.
You're
in the first
kidding.
Round.
No. Is it in Greensboro?
I believe it's in the Carrier Dome.
Yeah, because if they're a top. Oh, that's funny.
And the NIT commissioner or head of the NIT selection committee said that there was. It's just a complete coincidence.
Yeah, right.
There's no. Yeah, I know. It's too good to be true.
That's funny. In this Boeheim's last year?
I think he's got one more season.
One more year. Okay,
it's always a weird thing when guys pledge they're going to. Or Remember Maryland football? Did the fridge, Friedgen,
James Franklin,
coach in waiting?
Coach in waiting, yeah, sure.
Those things never work out the way.
So there's a coach in waiting for Syracuse basketball.
It looks like it'll probably be.
But has it been announced?
His name is Mike Hopkins, who's the assistant coach there.
Because remember, James Franklin had like $1 million retainer.
Yes.
And then
so his longtime assistant, I believe the guy's name is Mike Hopkins, is the assistant at Syracuse. Been there a long time, and he is expected to take over. I don't know if that will be what happens, but okay. I think that's the case. But it's just the idea of like I'm going to retire in 2 years, two
yeah,
and a half
that's,
years.
That's a little, yeah.
It's just a weird thing.
Yeah,
it's a weird thing.
I'd agree.
All right, Dix, thanks for coming in, getting this done.
Right on.
Enjoy the week. Enjoy the games.
You too.